Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Hactiva Live Radio. This is a weekly show brought to you by Hactiva Foundation, a Texas nonprofit, nonpartisan information and intelligence network for citizen engagement and political participation. My name is Felipe Wicochea, and today we have a very interesting show. We're going to follow up what's going on in the primaries in the states that are holding primaries today. We're going to have an interview, a conversation with Janie Serna, who's running for Constable on Precinct 1 in Travis County, which is in the area of Austin, the capital of the state of Texas. And we're going to also talk about voter ID laws, whether they help, and really what's the purpose, what's the explanation, justification for requiring people to present photo ID when they are casting their ballots. That's something that in the past couple of days has been very controversial. President Obama made a direct reference while he was visiting the South by Southwest Festival here in Austin, Texas. So we're going to talk about that as well. So let's start with elections. Today on March 15. Today, the states of Florida, Illinois, Missouri, North Carolina, Ohio are holding primaries for both parties. In the case of Illinois, North Carolina, and Ohio are also holding primaries for the Senate and the House, and North Carolina is holding also primaries for the governor's office. So a lot of things going on, and this is a very important day because the states that are at contest in this primary election are states in which the winner takes all the delegates for each one of the states that is at contest, unlike the previous elections that we have seen during the early stage of the primary. You have there's no proportional distribution of delegates. So whoever wins the primary is going to take all the delegates for that state. In the case of Florida, is the home state of Senator Marco Rubio, so it's going to be important battleground for Rubio. If he is unable to win in his own state, we can pretty much assure that his race would be pretty much over. The same goes for John Kasich, which is his home state is on the ballots today. Ohio is holding the primaries, and in his case, although there's not high expectations on what's going to happen with John Kasich, there's rumors, there's a lot of political are holding the theory that all the candidates are going to hold to their candidates till the Republican convention to have a contested convention, which means that no single candidate would have enough delegates to secure the nomination before the convention. There's a lot of attention in how Donald Trump is going to perform in this primary in the state of Florida, Ohio. Illinois is another really, I would say, even crucial state given the recent events in the past couple of days where a rally for Donald Trump was canceled due to security concerns. The same thing happened in Kansas. So we're seeing a very strong pushback from unlikely allies, media inside the Republican Party. There's a super PAC that just launched what would be considered an attack against Donald Trump. In my opinion, it's not an attack when you're telling the truth, and what this group did was basically make a compilation of the remarks that Donald Trump has made towards women, which are very, very nasty stuff that any third grader would be suspended from the classroom if he or she was daring to repeat what Donald Trump has said about women. So women are taking a stand. They are gathering resources for what we hear. They have been able to raise a decent amount of money to run this ad on the states in which there's going to be presidential primaries. So it's an interesting event that it's going to, in my opinion, it's going to really harm Donald Trump, because what he has said about women is unacceptable in any scenario, and let alone in a presidential election. If that's what he thinks of women, how he refers to women, it's totally unacceptable. Which brings me to an open letter that was published yesterday. If you want to check it out, we posted that, the full text, in our website and our Facebook page on facebook.com/Hacktiva. We have the full text of the open letter to Donald Trump from humans from New York. Basically, the premise of that open letter is that fighting Trump has become now a moral issue. It's not a political one. Most of the very controversial remarks that Trump has made throughout his campaign, from the opening speech in which he blamed us Mexicans of being rapists and drug dealers and bringing crime, to the ban on Muslims and an endless string of attacks and insults and aggressions towards minorities, women, veterans, disabled people, Black Lives Matter, Bernie supporters, and pretty much everyone. So this letter, the premise is, since most of the comments and insults coming from the Trump camp are not political but moral, this journalist who wrote the letter decides to take a stand and say this has become a battle not for the presidency but the moral standing of this nation. And I totally agree. This is a position that I personally took very early on during the campaign. It was not political. It was a moral issue for me to take a stand. We organized the first public event denouncing Donald Trump's hate speech. We had a rally here in Dallas City Hall on early September, a week before he announced that he was going to come to Dallas. So we organized that rally first, and then we organized the second rally when he had an event in the American Airlines Center. So definitely it's not about politics. It's about the moral standing of our nation, of our society, and that should be denounced and criticized and exposed in every single front. So speaking of long primaries and media coverage, I was reading today the breakdown of how much earned media each candidate has had throughout the race, and that would explain why Donald Trump has gone so far with so little money. You add very controversial, almost inflammatory rhetoric to media that is hungry of sensationalism, and you have the result that we are seeing today. The estimation of the earned media by the Donald Trump campaign is $1.8 billion, billion with a B. So that's a lot of money of earned media. He claims that he's self-funding his campaign. What he has not been disclosing openly is that he's loaning money to his campaign and paying himself back with the contributions that people are, for whatever reason, giving to his campaign. So the idea that he's self-funded is just partially true. He is loaning money to his campaign, but as a businessman that he is, the calculation that as soon as he gets a nomination, he's going to get his money back and then have the Republicans pay for the rest of his campaign. So just so you know, the money, this is all public information. You can check the FEC website, which is the Federal Election Commission website. There's a public report of all the financial activity of every single federal candidate, so you can check it out. Okay, now we're going to jump right into our very interesting conversation with Janie Serna. Janie Serna is running for constable on Precinct 1 in Travis County. And Janie Serna has a very long history of public service. She has volunteered for the Austin Independent School District. She has participated in the Manor ISD, in PTAs, in campus advisory councils. She has worked in that same precinct that now she is running for, and has been a very dedicated community member, including recognition from the NAACP, Boy Scouts of America, Cesar Chavez Community Award, and she has lived in that precinct for over 17 years. So we're going to start our conversation with Janie Serna. Janie, please tell us, is this your first experience seeking public office?
No, actually, this is my second run.
It's your second attempt in that precinct, correct? And Constable, for just to help our audience understand, what's the impact in our everyday life that a constable has in your case, Precinct 1? What's the influence of your everyday activities in the citizens' everyday lives?
Well, the constable's office is not a call-driven office. So that kind of helps us be more engaged in the community, because we don't take calls like the Sheriff's Department does and APD. So we get to have a more one-on-one with the community and partner with them.
APD, just for the sake of clarification, is the Austin Police Department, which is basically where you're running. We have a national audience, so just to geographically, you're going to be in the Austin area, correct?
That's correct. I will be in the Austin area in Travis County Constable, Precinct 1.
I want to ask you if you remember, when do you first register to vote?
Well, you know, it's been a while. It's been a while, but I think I registered when I was probably about 21 years of age.
Mm-hmm. And do you remember what motivated to register?
Well, I wanted my voice heard, just like anybody else. You know, it's not something that, I guess as young adults, we figure, you know, we don't have to vote. Why vote? But at that time, I realized, you know what, even though I'm just a simple, ordinary person, my voice has to be heard. I want to be part of the community, you know, and I want to have a voice on what's going on our, in our daily life.
Do you remember your first voting experience?
I don't. I'm going to be honest, I don't. I do remember that I was excited and that I had voted and my vote was counted, but I don't remember, like, what exactly was going on at that time. But I do remember being very excited and voting for the first time.
Yeah, a sense of accomplishment and the duty that it's fulfilled. And I want to remind our audience that voting is a right. It's something that we have to be very clear about. It's not a privilege. It's something that we, as part of the community, are responsible to elect those who are going to represent our best interest, and we have to participate.
Do you come from a background
in which politics was like a common subject at the dinner table, or where does your interest in getting engaged in the political process comes from?
I do not come from a family that was very active in politics. As you know, our daily lives is not about talking about politics. It's mostly taking care of the family, making sure we have our basic needs. But we did talk about politics, especially when something, especially like the presidential elections would come around, that was definitely something that we would talk about.
Yeah, in big events. Because I hear often that it's, especially with extended family and we as Latinos, politics tend to be kind of controversial subject, so it's kind of avoid it in family gatherings, but we have to shift in having that political conversation, especially in this day and age where the rhetoric is so hostile, so aggressive, and I think we have to bring especially our youth into the conversation, listen to their concerns, and get them engaged in the political process, which brings me to my next question. In your opinion, what should we be doing as a community in order to engage young people in the process to participate, to get involved, not only in national politics, because presidential elections, they suck a lot of air, a lot of attention, a lot of media coverage, but there's a lot of officers like the one you're running for that have a direct impact in our everyday lives. So as a community, in your opinion, how can we engage more young people to get involved in the process?
You know, that's a very good question, because I also have a teenager at home. She's 19. And we had we sat down during dinner and we talked about it. And I told her, it's very important for you to go register. And of course, she says, Mom, you keep telling me. I said, well, you've got to understand that your vote will be heard. And if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. Not only that, when you vote, you can say, you know what, I made a change. And whatever it was, if it was a presidential, because those people are going to be making decisions for us. So we've had a very heart-to-heart conversation, and I'm glad I convinced her. She registered, and just recently was the first, when she was 18, was her very first time voting. And as Latino, we are such a large segment of population that we should go out and vote. We should not be quiet, especially our young people. You know, they need to be active and participate. This is something so important. We have to come together and speak out. You know, that's the only way we're going to make a change. Our students, our young people have to be more involved in the community and the neighborhood, you know, because that speaks volumes when a child or student is very active and volunteer. They get to learn more and get more involved in politics. And that's a must, especially for us Latinos.
Yeah, that's something we're working hard as a foundation. Our goal is to get young people engaged in the civic life and at all levels. I mean, from problems in their own street, I mean, potholes, trash collection, stray animals, you name it, from all levels of the civic life, to get people involved and to provide them with the tools and the information and the inspiration to get them involved. So speaking of inspiration, why that particular precinct? What is the issues that you see in that precinct that encourage you to say, I need to run, I need to fix this?
I can tell you this, I am not a career politician, but I am a career servant. Mm-hmm. I worked as Constable Precinct 1. I worked under the legendary Don, the late legendary Don Espy. And when I see him, I see myself, because he dedicated a lot to that community, to this community that I'm trying to bring back everything he started. I was very motivated with what he did, what he brought to the community, that I want to keep that going. But the only way I can do that, I mean, I could continue doing it because I'm very involved in the community. I volunteer numerous of hours with Maynard ISD, Austin ISD, PTA, PTO. But I want to do it at the next Constable Precinct 1. He has been my motivator, and I just want to continue where he dropped off.
Excellent. So where can our listeners go and learn more about your campaign? I'm guessing you have a website, Facebook.
That is correct. I have my website is janieserna.com. And, of course, I have my Facebook, Janie Serna. And, you know, I would love to hear from the community here in Travis County in Precinct 1. I have meet and greet. I would love for them to come out and share with me their concerns, how we community.
Well, thank you very much. Any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
Yes. The next election, the runoff election, is May 24th. Early voting starts May 16th through the 20th. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you and everybody else for trusting me. And, of course, they must come out to vote in order for their voice to be heard.
Well, thank you very much. I know the campaigns take a lot of time, especially in a runoff election. Those are difficult votes. Just to remind our listeners, those dates that Janie just gave us are for the whole state of Texas. All the runoff elections are going to be held in the same dates. So look up your local races, who's running, who you want to support, and get out and vote. If you're not registered, you can still register to vote in the runoff election. The cutoff date for the registration is 30 days prior to the election, so you can still get registered to vote and take part in this runoff election. Well, Janie, thank you very much for being with us today.
And thank you for having me on the show.
If you want to take part of the conversation, we have still a few minutes on the air. You can call 347-850-1181. That's 347-850-1181. We can answer any questions or listen to any commentary that you want to give on the air. Well, you heard the runoff election in the state of Texas and the call for all the community to take part in the political process, to participate, to make our voices be heard. Now, going back to the voter ID laws and the criticism that President Obama made during the South by Southwest festival, he make a very specific mention about the specific law in the state of Texas that prohibits online voter registration. And what he said is that the current state leaders are not interested in having more people participate in our democracy. That was the criticism that President Obama had said during his visit to Austin, Texas. And the response of the Greg Abbott, the state governor, was that Texas was going to continue cracking down vote fraud. Now, of course, that's an argument that everyone would agree. We don't want a democracy that is plagued with voter fraud. Many of us who grew up in countries, in my case, in Mexico, I mean, the election process in my first voting experiences was full of fraud. There were really bad practices, and we don't want to import that in our democracy. We're not calling people to register to vote if they're not eligible. We don't want voter fraud. The only problem is that the Texas voter ID laws, as the governor is trying to defend, they do not address a significant problem. And he points out a couple of studies regarding voter fraud, which basically proves our point that it's practically non-existent crime in the state of Texas over a, I mean, with the amount, there's millions of registered voters every year, millions of ballots are cast, and the incidence of voter fraud, which, I mean, the only form of voting fraud that voter ID laws could prevent is voter impersonation, meaning you go to vote with someone else's, under someone else's name. That's the only type of fraud that voter ID would prevent, and it's practically not existent. Just as a reference, it's more likely that you can get hit by a lightning bolt than to find voter ID fraud in the state of Texas. So it is a solution for a non-existing problem, which they defend fiercely. It's very restrictive in the type of IDs that they accept in order to cast a ballot in the state of Texas. You have to have either a driver's license or a open a concealed carry permit or a passport or a military ID or a certificate of naturalization with a photo. Excuse me. So it is very restrictive. I think it it's a disservice to our democratic process. I think it's a shame that our elected officials, mainly the House of Representatives and the State Senate, they don't encourage participation. That's something we have to fight. It's voting is a right. It's not a privilege. And sometimes I wish that we would defend that right to vote with the same passion, commitment, and energy that a lot of people defend the Second Amendment. That's non-negotiable. It's non-negotiable by any attempt is faced with a fierce response, and I think we should take that same approach with voter ID laws. Any law that disenfranchise voters, law that disencourage people to participate should be forcefully rejected and with all our energy and with all our resources. Well, that's our show for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Remember, our next show is Tuesday, 5:30, Activa Radio. Thank you very much for being with us today.